Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and Madison Computer Works. Joining us now, John Nichols, Associate Editor with the Capital Times and correspondent for The Nation. Very, very, very troubling report about Foxconn this week. Very confusing, very muddled. This has been a long-term trend down for what they initially promised. I'm going to play a story here. This is from WISN in Milwaukee, Channel 12.
President Donald Trump, as well as Foxconn leaders, Governor Scott Walker, and local officials talked on camera a lot as taxpayers were being told they could be on the hook for up to $4 billion to lure a big factory and thousands of jobs to Racine County.
Hi, Mr. Terry Sater from Channel 12. Yeah. We're just trying to find out what your reaction is to the Foxconn news that's been coming out.
We had to track down Mount Pleasant Village President David DeGroot at home today, trying to get answers to the most recent news that not only was Foxconn changing its factory future, now there appeared to be at least a temporary construction halt.
First, don't come to my house, and secondly, we put out a statement yesterday, and we'll stand by the statement. Thank you.
That statement assured taxpayers 13,000 jobs and a $10 billion investment would still come. Quote, "We fully expect that Foxconn will meet its obligations to the state, county, and village." But Nikkei Asian reported it has a Foxconn document indicating the $10 billion investment in display production in the state of Wisconsin has been suspended and scaled back as a result of negotiations with new Governor Tony Evers. Foxconn called the report inaccurate, but no one from Foxconn or the state would talk on camera.
We're driving through the Foxconn construction project in Racine County, and we now have a security vehicle tailing us. They haven't stopped us or said anything to us, but I'll show you a picture of them following us.
We pulled over to what appeared to be the main construction office, and the security officer walked up.
Have you heard anything about the project?
Make any comments. You guys are on private property. You guys need to leave.
Okay.
We left in search of answers and headed to Mount Pleasant Village Hall.
Terry Sater from Channel 12.
Okay.
We're just trying to get answers to an update on the Foxconn project. Today it's being reported that it's been suspended.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out myself. I haven't been here in the past day and a half.
Terry, will taxpayers get stuck with a bill if Foxconn scales back or backs out?
Great question, Patrick. State and local government leaders say the development agreements are legally binding and include strong protections for taxpayers. We're told tax dollars are tied to job creation and that Foxconn is obligated to pay for the roads and other improvements, even if it backs out, Patrick.
All right. Why is Tony Evers saying that plans are moving forward? That everything's... He didn't say everything's fine, but why is he starting to own this? I'm a little confused, John.
Yeah, I think you should be very careful about that. And we talk about it in a sec, but I do want to just coming off what you just played, I think it's important to
point out. Wasn't that something?
It was really something. It's important to point out that first security guy that stopped him, I mean, I know voices. I don't know how well good you are. That was clearly Robin Boss. Didn't it sound like Robin Boss? He's got like a side job. Because it really sounded a lot like him. Maybe I'm wrong. I'll acknowledge I might not be right there. But, here's the deal on the whole Foxconn thing. In September of 2017, which I know is ancient history, a lot of people don't remember back that far, but the Cap Times editorial was headlined, "Wisconsin won't be Foxconned for long." And what we argued then in 2000.
Are you a prophet, John?
I don't think so. I think it's pretty much anyone who looked at all at what was going on knew that Foxconn had done bait and switch in Pennsylvania and other states, in countries around the world, that it was, it's frankly a mess of a company that has always played on the margins, environmentally, labor rights-wise, a whole bunch of other things. And that there was no way this was a good deal. There was no way that they would do what they said they were going to do. We pointed that out 2.5 years ago. And you know who else pointed that out? Most of the major financial publications in the country, most of the major observers, all said, bad deal, doesn't look good. And yet, and we can't really blame Scott Walker because he's, a retired man, living on the margins.
He's living in a deluxe apartment in the sky what he's doing.
He's a marginalized figure, though, tweeting about global warming, right? But Robin Voss.
Did you see how excited he was the other day about that grilled cheese and that tomato soup? He was very, very excited about that.
Well, because you're always doing those cold sandwiches in the bag. This is what the first hot dog that he's had, apparently. But, he's a tragic figure, right? He literally said the other day, it's cold, he had this thing when it got really cold, casting doubt on global warming, right? And so it's sort of like people stopped with that stupid line, what was it, 20 years ago? And so he's a pathetic figure, blah, blah, blah. But Robin Voss is still in power, right? He is still, a counterbalance to Tony Evers. Robin Voss is personally guilty for this. It's important to understand that in 2017, people pointed out this was a terrible deal, it was financially irresponsible, and that Foxconn would not produce the jobs that were being promised. Now, Paul Ryan's gone, Scott Walker's gone, Robin Voss is still there. And Robin Voss, to an even greater extent than Fitzgerald, really had the ability to check and balance this, to get this right. And he failed. He is personally responsible for whatever happens.
Which is why he's pointing fingers at Tony Evers.
And that's where we get to the thing that your initial ask there. Voss is so comic, so tragic, that, he thinks he can get out of this thing by saying, oh, yeah, somebody else became governor. Somebody else moved to a position of authority a couple weeks ago. So everything I did wrong is irrelevant now, right? It doesn't work like that. He's personally responsible for this. He made this happen. And what Evers should be doing is what he is doing. He is the adult in the room. There's no question of that. He is trying to salvage something from this, as he has throughout the whole process. But he should also not hesitate to say bluntly, and I hope he and people around him will, there was a failure of due diligence in 2017 and 2018 by Robin Voss. And it should be clearly stated, because you don't want that false narrative to take over.
Well, yeah. Why should he be the guy at the end of the parade with the shovel?
That's right. That's right. Now, here is the problem, Sly. He is the guy at the end of the parade with the shovel. You know what I mean? He is the governor of Wisconsin at a point. And how often have you been down there in southeast Wisconsin?
I haven't been down there for a while, I have to admit.
They've torn the whole thing up.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to lecture at Parkside last fall, and I left, the normal couple hours to do the whole, thing. I was late for the lecture because traffic was such a crisis down there, because they were literally tearing up the interstate. And then when you get off the interstate, they had, literally, they've torn up farm fields, they've forced people out of their homes, they have restructured government, townships, historic townships that go back to, statehood moments. Have become villages so that they can control their own development and, avoid certain things from happening. I mean, This has been a radical transformation of southeastern Wisconsin.
You know, I have to say, as Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald were pointing fingers at Tony Evers, this has been a slow-motion train wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, initially, 75% of the jobs created were going to be in manufacturing. That was the selling point. Then they took it down to 33%. Then they took it down to 10%. Now we're hearing reports that they may not make these flat-screen TVs at all there. And yet, they keep saying, and they're saying today, they're going to create 13,000 jobs. They're not saying where or when. They haven't met their goal as of yet. But have you ever noticed how nebulous they are when it comes to any details?
Well, and here's the problem. They're nebulous about details, but specific things have been done. Part of that tearing up of southeastern Wisconsin was literally to create, you know, new lanes on the interstate, new lanes on county and municipal roads down there to handle the traffic from all those jobs. So we've literally physically restructured southeastern Wisconsin to be ready for 13,000 people coming to manufacturing jobs that are never going to be there.
I don't know if you agree with me, but I hated the Kelo decision where eminent domain can be used to take private land from one owner and give it to another.
Yep.
To give it to a corporation. Well, what Mount Pleasant did, they didn't technically use eminent domain. They used some other monstrous actions to create where all those people lost their homes. This is a real tragedy. People have been trampled on here.
Right. And, again, let us go back to the history here. You can go back to tapes of this show or this podcast, you and I talking, where we talked about some things that we know. Number one, flat screen TVs, the kind that that Foxconn's talking about doing, are A, overproduced already, and soon to be a thing of the past in the way that they're talking about. So that was never going to happen. We knew that in 2017. We knew as they were cutting this deal that what they were talking about doing there was a backward technology. It was not a forward-looking reality. Number two, we knew in 2017, and we talked about it, Foxconn was on the cutting edge of automation globally. And it was an absurdity. It was literally comic to think that as Foxconn was robotizing, literally bringing robots into its plants in China and Vietnam and other places, that it was going to come to America, to southeast Wisconsin.
Well, now, John, Donald Trump called this the eighth wonder of the world.
Donald Trump is a literally a fool as regards manufacturing. And the important thing to understand is, you know, Donald Trump doesn't come out of manufacturing. He comes out of New York real estate development. This would be like saying, you know, Sly, you've done some broadcasting. Let's put you in charge of ABC, right? You might actually do a really good job. I have quite a bit of confidence in you. But Donald Trump is ignorant of the issues that he's talking about, and he is profoundly ignorant. As frankly, and I don't want to be too tough on him, most Republicans and most Democrats are of the technological changes that are taking place. We are moving into an automation age. Whether you like it or not, Foxconn was never, ever going to create a factory with 13,000 jobs.
All right, before we wrap this segment of the show up, 2 years from now, where are we going to be? What's going to be there? What will happen?
Have you ever been gone over the Illinois border, gone around, I guess it's Walworth toward Harvard, Illinois, and that area?
You're talking about where Motorola was going to be.
Yeah. Have you seen the Motorola campus down there?
I have not seen it. I've seen it on television. I've seen WMAQ TV and WLS TV with their cameras there saying, hey, whatever happened to...
Once upon a time, in another age where people were completely ignorant, thinking wrong, Illinois went in very big to put Motorola right on the Illinois-Wisconsin border, right? And they were going to have this huge Motorola facility there. They tore up the farm fields. They built the building. They put the flags up from around the world, the whole bit. They had a big driveway. And it essentially never happened, right? Motorola still exists, so to some you know, retooled different way. And it is within the realm of reason that Foxconn could have a small research center down there. It's possible, because they are interested in having some foothold, something on the ground in the upper Midwest, so that Trump will, A, be able to say, oh, yeah, something good happened there, even if it's not quite as many jobs, but B, as you get into a potential trade war with China, you know, Foxconn's one of the companies that would be most harmed by that, so they want to have a foothold in the U.S., not to actually manufacture stuff, but to be able to say, you know, as the trade and tariffs and everything comes down, oh, we're an American company. We're a company that has
investments in America. You know what's funny?
But it's going to be a lie.
A friend of mine that does work for the Milwaukee Bucks told me in the fall of 2017, I said, all right, what's the new, we were at a Bucks game in the Mecca. The Bucks came back and played one game in the Mecca in 2017 for their 50th anniversary. Anyway, I said, what's the name of the new arena going to be? And he goes, well, Foxconn really wants that name, but the Bucks said no. You know, I think the Bucks made a wise decision there.
Really smart, because I tell you, right, you know what? Foxconn is going to be in Wisconsin for as long as we live and far, far into the future. The word for having gotten screwed.
Stand by. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation at SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
And welcome back to SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends with the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Madison Teamsters, Local 695, and Jeff's Guitar Clinic. All right. So, John Nichols, Howard Schultz, former CEO of Starbucks, is considering running for president. He thinks the Democratic Party has become a big left-wing socialist something, and he decided to do an assessment of how he's doing so far. Here's what he said on Morning Joe.
Message. Well, I must be doing something right to create so much interest and backlash from the Democratic Party. I mean, some of it is a surprise, but we expected to see some of the level of vitriol, but not to the extent it's been. But, I mean, let's look at the facts of what I've tried to say. On 60 Minutes, I've specifically said I am seriously considering running for president as a centrist independent. Why? Because I've reached a conclusion that regardless of the situation, whether we're talking about comprehensive tax reform, immigration, all of the issues that the current government, both parties, have been unwilling and unable to solve, that whether a Democrat wins the presidency or Donald Trump gets reelected, I hope not, nothing is going to change because our politics and our government is broken.
So let me ask you that.
All right. Later on in the interview, he said that Ross Perot was not a credible candidate. Let me ask you, you were around in 1992, I think maybe working in Toledo at the time.
Yep.
Ross Perot's launch versus Howard Schultz's launch. Want to compare?
Yeah, I would compare. It's incredible. You know, remember that Perot shot to the top of the polls. I mean, he really was a viable contender, you know, for the presidency of the United States. He crashed and burned.
He was also an interesting person.
Well, yeah. I mean, he did wreck himself, remember?
But I'm saying he was a compelling figure.
Yeah, but my point is, yeah, he's a compelling figure. And if he had just kept his head about him.
Well, he's crazy. But
no, but if he had kept his head about him, the way that he launched that campaign, what he launched on.
He might have won.
He was certainly in the game. And remember, he ended up with the best third-party finish.
Right.
Percentage-wise.
But how dare Howard Schultz, I'm sorry, I'm not the biggest Ross Perot fan in the world, although he was right about NAFTA, but you know, could you have a worse start to a campaign than Howard Schultz?
I think Howard Schultz, I got to defend Howard Schultz here.
Oh.
You're going way too far down the line there. I want to defend this man. He has taught America something in a week, which, you know, for a very long time, Americans have struggled with trying to figure out. And that is that billionaires have nothing more to contribute to the debate than anyone else. He has absolutely confirmed that you can be an incredibly wealthy, incredibly successful man and know nothing. Like, literally, you know, have nothing to add. And what he is proposing, what he is advancing in this campaign is an argument that, you know, it's sort of like it was a bad argument 40 years ago in the Democratic Leadership Council.
Al Fromm.
And those fools who really have put the country back forever did tremendous damage. It was an awful argument, you know, when Bill Clinton advanced it and did NAFTA, GATT, China free trade, the end of Glass-Steagall regulation on banking.
Telecommunications Act.
Telecommunications Act of 1996. I mean, you just run down the list of things that Bill Clinton did that unwound the promise of the New Deal, the promise of the Fair Deal, the promise of great society, and severely harmed this country. Now, that's not to say that Bill Clinton was a worse harm than George Bush or than Donald Trump. That's not my point. I mean, and frankly, if I'm given a choice between Bill Clinton, some of the people he ran against, I would vote for Bill Clinton, okay? But my point is that Bill Clinton bought into a stupid analysis, right? That the Democratic Party had to be, at its very best, a centrist, managerial, boring, irrelevant, secondary force in American politics.
You know, I think
that's what he's saying.
There's very few people that still subscribe to that. Ron Kind and I think Tom Still. I think those are the last two people.
But Tom Still was a Republican.
I know, but
he was a conservative at least.
Yeah,
I don't know
but he subscribes to that notion. Anyway, so here is another clip of Howard Schultz talking about Democrats.
What qualifies you to be president of the United States?
What qualifies me to be president of the United States is my life experience. People are going to think it's my Starbucks experience. Mm-hmm. It's what I've learned along the way. It's sharing success. It's recognizing that every business decision is not an economic one. And it's an understanding, a real understanding, that somebody has to restore the promise of America. And what qualifies me is that I will be a leader of the country, of all American people, that people will trust and admire, because I will understand. I have walked in their shoes. I'm on both sides of the equation. I'm somebody who is successful. I'm somebody who came from the projects, and I understand the American people.
Who is the best Republican president in the past 50 years, the best Dem?
I have great respect for Ronald Reagan. Just came from the Ronald Reagan Library. The thing that I took away from Ronald Reagan, aside from all of the wonderful things he did, that really struck me, especially compared to the current person who is despicable in the Oval Office, Ronald Reagan never took his jacket off in the Oval Office in 8 years. Why? Because of his respect and the dignity of the office. That needs to be restored.
He was wearing that jacket, as a matter of fact, when he was lying about Iran-Contra.
You know what? Trump doesn't take his jacket off. But right off the bat, your analysis is a pretty weak one.
I don't care if you're wearing a Jimmy Buffett Hawaiian shirt. Who cares?
Yeah, it's so bad. But then, the weird part about what you just played there, Sly, this is the significant thing. The first part of what you played, where he's talking about, you know, business needs to share its success and, you know, uniting people. If he was just running on that, if he could just control himself, he'd be doing fine, right? I don't know that he would have taken off, but, you know, enough people have had a latte, right, that he'd be, you know, a credible candidate.
Yeah, I don't drink coffee.
No, but I'm...
You do. Doesn't their coffee suck?
Well, no, it's here's the two problems. When, you know, their peppermint mocha is credible, I guess, but the problem is this.
Credible.
They undermine really great local coffee shops, right? They're predatory.
Yeah, but here's what I hear from coffee drivers is that, it's snowing out, is that their coffee tastes burnt.
I think that argument can be made. Look, I mean, I'm telling you, they're the McDonald's of coffee, right? I mean, if you're really hungry and desperate, and you know, you might pull off the road and there you go. But they're not, you know, it's not like they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. He generalized something, and that's fine. Give him his due, and that's not the point. The point is that when he's talking about that, and some of the things he did at Starbucks, right, with, you know, in some cases treating employees with a minimum of respect better than some other places, yeah, if he was just talking about that, he'd be fine. But then you get the political question, best Republican president, best Democratic president, you know. Instead of saying what, you know, anybody should say, right? What's the best Republican president? Go ahead.
Abraham Lincoln.
Period. You're done. What's the best Democratic president?
Franklin Roosevelt.
Period. You're done, right? Don't say anything else.
To be fair to him, he did say Roosevelt for the Democrats. Although I don't know how you can
pick the one left winger,
right?
The guy closest to what the party is now getting back to. And even Harry Truman was a devolution of and a diminishing of Roosevelt. Roosevelt actually, imperfect as he was, flawed as he was in many ways, you know, clearly pulled the whole thing to the left. And now, after 75 years, people like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Elizabeth Warren and some other people are saying, essentially, we need to pull it back to the left. That's a wonderful message. It's a very healthy message. And Howard Schultz, you know, is coming and, you know, spilling coffee on it.
Here is Howard Schultz talking about unions.
What are you going to do about restoring the role of unions in this country?
Well, the issue of unions, if you look at the history of unions arrived in America because there were a lot of bad actors. Bad actors of companies, like my father worked for a company in which he was fired. Unions arrived on the scene because companies were not doing the right thing for their employees. Unions have an obligation and responsibility to protect their employees. But there are also very good companies in America, very good managements in America, who recognize that we have to share success, that not every business decision is an economic one. Unions have a role to play. But unions are not the answer. The answer to inequality is a comprehensive tax reform. I was outraged when President Trump gave a free ride to corporations of the 21.
Unions are not the answer to inequality.
You know, and comprehensive tax reform is, right? Well, let me give you this theory. When we had strong unions and high taxes, right? Kind of like really an old school construction here of strong unions and progressive taxation. Under that scary radical, Dwight Eisenhower, and we had really high taxes for rich people. What happened?
We were prosperous. We had a rising middle class.
Yeah.
Milwaukee was called the star of the Snow Belt. African American wages in Milwaukee and Wisconsin were above the national average.
People were rising, right?
Uh-huh.
And the promise was being extended. And in that moment, right, the great sins of the American experiment, you know, not just economic inequality, but social inequality, were beginning to be addressed. You know, it was in the midst of the 1950s, under Eisenhower, a Republican, right, that the Supreme Court began to address separate but equal, under judges that Eisenhower had appointed, that Eisenhower himself signed the first Civil Rights Act since the Civil War in 1957. These were not radicals, right? This was mainstream, sensible Americanism in the 1950s, and it worked. Now, we live in different times, and we have to understand that dynamics do shift, but Howard Schultz is wrong. His history is wrong. He is ignorant of history. He is ill-prepared to discuss these topics. because those unions in the 1950s were not coming because people were treated horribly in the way that he's talking about, you know, some of these circumstances. Those unions had come in the 1930s, during the Depression era, the 1940s. They had actually been thwarted by right-wingers, segregationists and others with the Taft-Hartley Act, but still they were strong in much of America. And those unions were now operating as strong, powerful forces in combination with a government that was frankly empowered by significant tax revenues from a, you know, aggressive tax policy that did in fact tax the rich. And we started to get some real progress, right? Not perfection. We didn't get to where we needed to be. But it is important to understand that Howard Schultz is so ignorant of American history, so ignorant of the basics, that he says things that literally make him sound like a fool.
Let me tell you a little story about him in Seattle. So he's saying that he's the one that can bring both sides together, and that if we pick one side or another, nothing's going to get done. He's also complained about the Democratic Party becoming socialist. He talked about not giving money to Elizabeth Warren, right? So he was the majority owner of a storied franchise that actually started at the same time the Milwaukee Bucks did, the Seattle Supersonics.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted a new arena, right? Now, the Bucks owners, the current Bucks owners, were able to work with labor and come up with something that not everybody was happy with, but they worked with the government. It was a bipartisan bill, and they accomplished something. What did he do? He threw a temper tantrum because he couldn't get the taxpayers of Seattle to pay for a new arena or upgrades to Key Arena, sold the team to someone he knew would move it to Oklahoma City, and there's no longer a basketball franchise in Seattle. Now, is that cataclysmic for the economy? No. But it demonstrates that, A, he has no problem with certain types of socialism, and B, he's a terrible negotiator, much like someone that's currently sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Well, and you're right about everything you say. Let's add one other thing, too. He breaks stuff. He busts things that exist, right? You know what I mean? He, like, gets his hands on things and makes them worse. Who else do we think of like that?
and I'm not saying he's the lunatic that Donald Trump is, because I don't think he's
a
lunatic.
In a contest between Howard Schultz and Donald Trump, I would vote for Howard Schultz, probably, if that was my only choice.
Yeah.
So it's not to nothing that we are saying here, to my view, is about trashing Howard Schultz. That's not.
He is an awfully unpleasant person.
He may be, and that's fine. I don't know the guy. You know, it's about the ideas. His ideas are bad. They are unhealthy.
Oh, but he's a moderate, John. He's a centrist.
Centrism. You know, I think we've discussed this before. You know, that Tariq Ali, the great British philosopher and thinker, wrote a book some years ago about, essentially, on the argument that the most dangerous thing in the world is the center, right? Because, I shouldn't say the most dangerous. It is the great danger of our times is the argument that we always got to go to the center. Because his argument was that in the center, you gather those who want to maintain a broken status quo, who want to enrich themselves, and who want to be secure in their privilege. And what he was arguing was, and obviously someone from the left, that, you know, there are times when you've got to get out of the center to move forward. And again, if your greatest president was Abraham Lincoln, in his time, Abraham Lincoln was not a centrist. In history, historians say, oh, yeah, he tried to hold the country together, stuff like that. No, what he was doing was breaking the grip of a corrupt and destructive center. Franklin Roosevelt was not a centrist. Again, historians now say, oh, yeah, he held the country together. Well, the way that he held the country together was by breaking the grip of a corrupt and dangerous status quo.
We got to leave it there. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.